Now, welcome everyone to the Men Talk About podcast. I am Paul Newell, your host, and in this podcast, we have Alex Askew. Very excited to have this man here. Alex is the co-founders of the Black Culinarian Alliance, and originally, I connected with Alex through a friend of ours, Corey Cutler. And Corey gave me this book that Alex put together with other contributors called Mindful Eating for the Beloved Community. So I'm really excited to talk to Alex about his work, his passions, which include leadership, and also how communities of color are using food as a healing medicine. So, Alex, before we get started, is there anything else you want to add to your intro so people can get to know a little bit more about your background before we get started?
Well, sure, Paul. Thanks for having me. I would think the first order of business is for everyone to understand that I'm a chef. I'm a professional trained chef. I went to the Culinary Institute of America. And so I have a deep sense of understanding how food flows through our system, through our community, through our individual and family lives. And so I just want to highlight that piece because I may refer to certain analogies or constructs that are culinary or food-based, which is, you know, one of the most important cornerstones of civilization is food, art, and music. And so I'm in the food lane or the food highway and, you know, have been in the culinary and social justice space for over 25 years. And so people keep that in mind. Some of the things that I say may be a little profound or a little bit complex because there's, anytime you look at a system, you're looking at the complexity of the system, and the food system is one of the most complex systems that there is in our world.
Truth. Thank you for that. And if things get a little complex, I'll be here to scale things back. So I want to make sure that the listeners can get a good grasp of what you're saying, because having the conversations that I've had with you so far, I mean, you're bringing gems and you're bringing, in my judgment, you're bringing different layers to the food game, especially for the communities of color. So I appreciate that. And I'm excited to really get into this. And, you know, one of the things to really highlight this from the conversation that I had with you, Alex, I think it was a couple of weeks ago. The thing that really stuck out to me it seemed like your mission right now is to really hone in on, at the time we talked about the learning, growing, and healing towards leadership. And with everything that's going on recently, and at the time of this recording of the podcast, there is something called the coronavirus that is going through the world right now and has most of the world quarantined. So I wanted to get your take on, especially from a food perspective, what are the ways that people can learn, grow, and heal through these uncertain times with food and medicine? So I want to break this down first with the learning. So as far as learning with food, one of the things I'm noticing is that a lot of people are going to the supermarkets, getting a whole bunch of processed shit. And I'm curious to know, like, how is that? What are the ways that people can start to switch that gear and learn more about what they're eating to really battle and enrich their immune system and really help them with these uncertain times of fear? What are your thoughts on that?
Right. Well, I mean, I think that part of the strategy needs to get back to the basics of things. Culturally, as a marginalized community, Black and brown people, we all knew what things made us feel better. We all had grandma's, you know, secret recipes or her soups or concoctions that boosted the immune system or gave you more energy or cure this or that. And those are, you know, those are proven methods. There's no hokey pokiness in that, you know, chicken soup is good for your soul, and eating vegetables and, you know, the vegetables and fruits that have high vitamin C, antioxidants, you know, most of these things, if not available fresh, are available frozen, which is really a great strategy in the time of any time of food shortage. Is if you got electricity and you got a freezer, then that's a really great strategy, because you can always take out, cook, take out, make shakes, or the like. And so I think, you know, part of that is understanding, to your point, that processed foods aren't going to boost our immune system. Actually, it's going to do the opposite. It may, you know, feed the body, but absolutely not feed the mind and the soul, which is really what we're looking at. I mean, part of this challenge, which I'm even caught up in, is watching the television 24 hours and hearing the negativity, which all the stories are mostly 90% negative, and then being able to figure out how you're going to process that. If you're nervous, if you're stressed, your eating patterns are going to be different than if you and this all will manifest in some level of trauma for everyone. In the, again, Black and brown community, you know, there's always the trickle down effect where we may not feel it for a year or two, even after we're out it. And so we really need to look at the long game of, you know, feeding our spirit and making sure that there are foods that, you know, help us deal with stress, help us boost our immune system, and really are the foods that are represent resiliency in our, you know, in ourselves, again, family tables, sharing these type of meals, children, and aging well, senior populations, which is a major target, they're saying, of this coronavirus. We all got to be cognizant of the whole big picture and how food plays a major role in that process.
So Alex, so to come back on a couple of things, because you hit on some gems, man, already. When you say get back to basics, what I'm hearing you say what I'm wondering is that more like the veggies, the root vegetables, things that grow from the earth, things that are free of processing? Is that what you mean by basics, or is there something else that's included with that?
Well, I think it's a combination. I mean, you know, if we right now we have a pandemic, which is not connected to war or not connected to the loss of electricity, running water, or being able to cook. You know, there's some time. A lot of people are drawn towards, you know, the fast foods and the foods that are processed, because in relative terms, I mean, they don't have to cook. And so, you know,
yeah, it's convenience,
right? That's why they're called convenience foods. And so, you know, one of the things is, you know, my father, bless his soul, you know, he was from the rural North Carolina South. And, you know, he knew that, you know, it took a number of hours to cook beans. So he'd set it up the night before and they already be soaked. And he'd actually, you know, put it on low, go to work, come back. They were done. I mean, you know, these are things.
The original.
Yeah,
crock pot.
Absolutely. And these are things too that, you know, my 4-year-old son, he knows how to cook some things. I mean, he'd be able to watch some beans going on all day, or, you know, being able to, you know, watch some vegetables being roasted in the oven slowly. You know, these are things, I mean, obviously there's some adult supervision that's involved with cooking, but
Right.
I think that, you know, when I say getting back to the basics, back then, that's what kids did. They, you know, hey, well, I'm put this on the stove, watch it for me. You know, I mean, these are the
Right.
type of
Yeah, I
things. And
remember
so,
that.
you know,
Yes.
you mentioned
Yes.
root vegetables, but I mean, it's the whole gamut of, you know, not only, you know, root vegetables, but there's beans, there's low glycemic grains. I mean, there's all types of things that can build up, you know, that healthy resilience that I'm talking about through food and being able to control the process, cooking it at home versus the commercialized
Right.
process, which is really once you investigate it, what they do to foods, what they put into foods is not on our side of health.
It's interesting because when you, as you're saying this, I remember reading something in your in the collection of essays that you put together, and I wrote it down, and I'm happy I did because one of the lines was that Western diet changed food from medicine to a poison that wreaks havoc on our bodies. And with what you just said there, like especially the foods, the having the foods of resiliency. I'm interested how that plays into the trauma piece that you discussed, because you said like, you know, this like the way that we eat now has impact down the road.
Right.
So can you talk to how that all comes together? Because I'm wondering, I'm curious on how you see that working.
Well, I mean, it's simple chemistry, actually. And everyone can do the experiment. You know, if they're even if you're feeling good or not feeling good, regardless, if you do a diet of high fat and sugar for a week, even if you don't suffer from depression, you'll have some characteristics of depression. I mean, you know, what happens with the body is we're not able to, you know, especially with the amount of calories we burn now versus what we burned 50 or 100 years ago, our body can't process that. You know, it slows down. And once our body slows down, once our metabolism slows down, that, you know, leaves us open to a variety of different psychological chemistry situations, but one of them is depression. And, you know, that's
Interesting.
you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you ever were in a space, you stressed out, you go to McDonald's, you eat a Big Mac or two. You know, there's not a lot of time that goes by before you not, you know, before you don't start feeling depressed or guilty, or your body starts feeling less embracing of what you just put into it. And so, you know,
It's
not
like it's not
not res
receiving
well
the
because there are
nutrients
none.
that you give
You know, you took on all these calories
it.
and they're empty. You know, it's just like drinking, you know, just like drinking soda. You know, you drink 2 liters of soda, you know, you're going to have a chemical reaction inside your body because you took in all these calories, but all of them were empty. And so it really hijacks the brain, in effect. And that's why we need to be careful because, you know, trauma, stress, depression, all of those things lead to not only emotional disorders, but emotional eating disorders. And that's you know, that leaves us susceptible to being a victim of the system instead of a survive, you know, a survivor of the system.
Wow. So you the term you just said, emotional eating disorders. So that's when we're that's when one can experience that depression, and then that shifts their mood.
I
Is
mean,
that
there's
what I'm
different,
hearing
you
you say?
know, there's different categories within that frame. I mean, there's different diseases, you know, that, you know, bulimia and you know, different eating direct disease related areas and categories. But what I'm referring to is, you know, what happens when you eat out of stress, or it's called stress eating. You know, there were times in my life where, You know, I call, you know, food the most powerful legal drug that there is. I mean, you have access to, because what happens is that there's a release of endorphins. So, I mean, basically the same type of effect that, you know, drug addicts would get, you know, and they can't stop that feeling, because it, you know, let's face it, if you are not feeling well, if you are depressed, stressed, and or in pain, either physically or mentally, you look for, you know, you look for that euphoria or endorphin release because that makes you feel better. That's just the science of how that works. And so a lot of people will go out and eat or go out and eat because they want to have that feeling, you know, that doesn't last too long, by the way. It's very, very short, but it's still that temporary feeling of relief of that pain and anxiety. And so that is really core to marginalized communities. Why is it that there's most of the fast food chains in marginalized communities? Obviously, there's a marketing science behind that. So, you know, how do we break that pattern? You know, for myself, when I did have those periods, you know, it's really a matter of understanding, you know, what you're putting in your body and what's going to be the long-term, you know, consequences or effects of that. And yeah, everybody deserves a treat once in a while. And those are treats. I mean, you know, if I'm if I'm in the gym for, you know, 3-4 weeks straight, you might see me run into a McDonald's, buy a filet of fish, throw off half the bun because that's all sugar and that's my treat, you know, or from some frozen yogurt. Right. But understanding that, you know, treats could be the segue into a bigger painful picture if you don't understand that treats are treats and that doesn't serve your body. So the question I always ask myself is how is this serving my body? Yeah. And sometimes the answer is not very good, you know, especially if it's a treat, but understanding which buckets you're putting that into, I think is very, very important and paramount to, you know, the whole health equation.
So this is, I'm going to pause here for a second because this is resonating deeply with me right now because for several things that you said. First, along the lines of, well, the food is the number one legal drug. That right there said it all because I know when for me being stressed and telling myself like when I was going through divorce and even like, you know, financial worries and difficulty, like if I didn't have much money, I was looking more towards fast food and going to Wendy's, getting a 4 for $4 or what have you, because I could scrounge up the change rather than going to the supermarket and getting some food where I could take my time, cook it, think through things, enjoy my meal. I was going for the fast rush to get me that quick endorphin, help me feel a certain way. And you hit it on the head. It didn't last long. So for listeners that are for the people that are listening to this, this is important to recognize, especially when important to recognize in the fact that be aware of why you're eating what you're eating. Is it stress related? Is it to build your body? Is it getting back to basics so that your body can really learn how to receive nutrients? Because as you mentioned, because we're the society right now, especially with the fast food and all the bread and all these things, you know, when you talk about the fact that it's free of any nutrients, the body, it's like use it or lose it. If the body says, okay, I'm taking something in and there are no nutrients in here, I'm going to shut off my receptors. Now my whole body's jacked up. And now my body isn't receiving any nutrients from what I'm hearing you say, right? So this piece right here is interesting because with the fear and everything that's going on around uncertainties, I'll just call it because people that listen to this, by the time people listen to this, for some, the coronavirus may be gone. And through uncertainty, this issue still remains. So you mentioned that you had those spaces where, you know, you use stress, but then like you'd have your treats. So I see this as part of the growth through uncertainty, right? So what for you, what were the triggers or the catalysts to help you grow past those behaviors of using food as like that euphoric elixir to get over things real quick? What were some of the growth spurts for you?
Well, I mean, you know, if you look at it from a systems thinking perspective, which systems thinking is based on, mm-hmm. you know, peeling back the onion, you know, you have to realize that you are in pain. All right. And pain's the only way pain serves any individual is towards the alleviation of that pain and suffering. When you're in pain, you don't really care that much about yourself more than stopping the pain. So, again, peeling back that onion, you know, why are you in pain? And these are like, you know, I like to, you know, coin them as internal conversations that you need to have because
that they are, yes.
You know, when you look at going through something, whatever it is that brings on the onset of pain and suffering, you know, part of it is, you know, sometimes you feel guilty, and that's, you know, that's where the mindfulness piece comes in, because you really can't judge yourself. You have to kind of meet yourself where you are. And if you beat yourself up along the process, right, it just gets much, much, much worse. And so that whole growing piece is being able to have that internal conversation and really kind of looking truth in the eye. I mean, you might just be in a really bad place, and that's okay, because that's normal to go to bad places. Right. I mean, you know, that's the nature of life, you know, and the law of rhythm, the universal rhythm. And so one of the contributors to the Mindful Eating Beloved Community book was my meditation guru. His name is Chris Block. And, you know, he has a very profound question in his essay around, do you even like yourself? And when I first asked myself that question, I was like, you know, I hope nobody can listen inside my head, because that's a very, very, I mean, depending on what place you're in, depending on what experiences you had in life, mm-hmm. depending on where you are on the, you know, social economical ladder of life, that answer could be all the difference in you having a relationship or a healthy relationship with yourself, which is necessary to have a healthy relationship with anyone else, including food. So it gets kind of deep, and you know, that is.
Hold on, let's pause for a second, because you hit on something right here. Do you like yourself?
Do you even like? Yeah, do you like yourself?
This
yeah.
right here for the. Do you even like yourself? Because Alex, this question is huge, and I had this in the notes from our first conversation. I knew you'd bring this up. Thank you for this, because people, when it comes to what we put in our body, it is a reflection of what we think of ourselves. Would you agree? This is huge. Like when we talk about the growing, and this even, I think that this can even flow into the healing portion of this. Do you, right? Because do you even like yourself is one of those, like, I'm going to speak for myself, man. This is the question. When you asked this the first time, I was like, damn, I had myself asking this question when I would put certain things in my body. I was like, hold up, man. Do I even like myself right now? I'm not, because I'm stressing out. I'm looking at this burger right here, and it's all greasy. And I'm not feeling myself. And what is the root to that? When you talk about getting deeper, there is something underneath that where I was in shame. I was in guilt. I was in sadness. One of them. And that reflecting in what I wanted to put my body, which in turn impacts how my body even processes
That's correct. And there's also a bigger picture. And there's two very important things. If the answer is, for whatever reason, and I can say, I can't speak for everyone or all your listeners, but I've been there. The answer, you know, sometimes is no, I'm not feeling like I'm liking myself. And what you have to do is be very, very mindful at that point that you don't judge yourself, because that could bring on guilt. It is what it is. You have to actually have compassion for yourself, and almost like, you know, from a third person perspective, why doesn't this person like this good person, you know? And then what you need to do is really kind of ponder on that in a very non-judgmental way. And, you know, that's very, very hard to do, because you may feel guilty. You may feel that sense of shame. But you have to approach it almost like you're trying to nurture a spirit and meet yourself wherever you are, and whatever you've done, you know, meet yourself where you are to have that conversation. And what is possible is that you can reprogram your subconscious by having these internal conversations. And it's a step-by-step process. You can't just say, well, you know, I'm here and this is unacceptable. And especially for people like myself that are very hard on my, you know, I'm very disciplined. So if I miss, you know, if I get a C or a B, you know, I can become emotionally unstable because my goal was an A. And you know, really just trying to be that, almost like a sports athlete after they lose a big game. You know, you go in the locker room, you know, and you just try to, you know, you have to try to wash it off by having that internal conversation.
Right.
And saying, tomorrow's another day. You know, if I wake up tomorrow, that's my opportunity to have another day of liking myself more.
Wow. So, Alex, now I'm really curious, because with your background in food and being a chef, I'm curious what brought you to these realizations, because these are, you know, this is layered, man. Like, you talk about peeling the onion, like you cut that junk in half, went to the core, man. So how did you get to this place, you know, from especially knowing your background?
The first thing, I mean, I was privileged and blessed to be awarded in 2014 a Kellogg Fellowship in Leadership, Racial Equity, and Healing. So I took full advantage of that opportunity. And I had a meditation coach, Chris Block, again. And over the course of those 3 years, I was able to actually understand, you know, the meditation and meditative process of just really connecting through your mind with your spiritual self. And why that was important for myself being a Black and brown person is that in communities of color, meditation is shunned, you know, kind of shunned, and really looked at in a negative light, almost like mental health or behavior health. And, you know, a lot of it is because of the unknown. And really, I have to say, in part, there's a category of ignorance that's involved about what it is and what it isn't. And, you know, not to go off tangent, but there's a whole field called, you know, the quantum field technology, which has to really deal with the power of the mind, and not only the power of the mind on yourself, but the power of your mind with other things that are living. And this is a science, but, you know, I think through meditation, I was able to first have a better sense of awareness and self-reflection. And it really helps ease that, you know, personal conversation that you have with yourself. You know, I mean, you know, a lot of people would say, you know, well, you talk to yourself, you're crazy. Or, you know, if you explore, you know, speaking to someone in behavior health, then, you know, that makes you a little cuckoo or crazy. But, you know, then there's the other framework that everyone from time to time needs a checkup from the neck up. And, you know, it's really important that yes, we understand, and especially, you know, for communities of color, we are traumatized generationally. And it's not a matter of if we're traumatized, but to what degree? Because we all, you know, and I've met a lot of people, especially in the culinary world, that carry around this weight that they're not even able to have a conversation with themselves in their own personal safe space. So there's something really deeper there that, you know, is around a relationship. And food is about a relationship. And if you don't have a good relationship with yourself, I find that, you know, most people that struggle with, you know, the whole eating, binge eating, overeating, don't have good relationships with themselves. And so that is, you know, how do you even start that conversation with yourself? You know, and some of this is our unresolved issues. Some of these things, you know, I beg people to, especially my friends, that, you know, if you got insurance, there's no excuse. I mean, if you don't, that's another thing. But, right, you know, to just, and even if it's once or twice a month, just check in and just, you know, and use therapy as a sounding board, you know, along with meditation. You know, I think that you have to understand that we can't pretend that we're healthy. And health is, you know,
right,
health is not the absence of disease. That just means you're not sick. So how do we become healthy? You know, and that's like my goal. How do I become healthy? Right. Am I healthy now? No, I'm not there, you know, but I do know that if you have a plan, if you are looking at the food you eat and what you could eat, and trying to swap that out, am I against eating meat? This is not what this is about. It's about really understanding that, you know, you should limit your meat. If you eat meat, it should be good meat. You know, you should know where it comes from, and the like. And you should also explore eating more plant-based, because that has just been proven to show health benefits.
Well, this is the thing. If you say relationship is about food, right? So if, well, I'm thinking this for myself. When I'm in good relationship with myself, I'm going to be more conscious and aware of what I'm going to put in my body. Because especially if I'm doing more than mindfulness and meditation, and I appreciate the population that you're reaching out to and what you're doing, because, you know, these are spaces people talk meditation is woo woo and all this stuff, and I see it's becoming more engaged in our societies right now, and most people still are hesitant to do it because it really taps into that relationship with self, and that also taps into that healing portion of really being aware of, wow, when I eat something, I feel like X. When I eat this, I feel like X. Because when you talk about relationship, food is a relationship. And also you said the power of the mind with living things, with what's living. I'm also wondering, like, the power of the community, really taking that time and coming back to the basics of, like, whether it's cooking together, eating together, being mindful together. Like, what are the roles that you see that playing in as far as the healing portion of food and growing in uncertain times?
It's relationships. So it's, you know, the Native Americans for hundreds of years were singing to the corn. And, you know, there's this notion of you should never be angry when you cook. And, you know, I believe George Washington Carver, you know, wrote a piece on how he could communicate with plants. And you know, some of this may seem very, very weird, but, you know, there is a connection to all living things. I mean, you know, for those that don't believe it, I think that, you know, you should do your own, you know, personal journey of research. There is that connection, and, you know, food is love, you know, that's really how you show love. And it's really, you know, I'll tell you this story. I mean, you know, for the last couple of years, you know, I mow my grass differently. And, you know, if I see something that is, you know, that I feel deemed is beautiful and should live, you know, I don't mow it down. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I have the power to let you live. And, you know, my neighbors, you know, that's at one beautiful. Point they would come, you know, they come to my yard and almost like kind of like, you know, you must be a little crazy. Hey, you know, you missed all these weeds when you were mowing your grass. And I said, well, who said they're weeds? And, the reaction was, well, right. They're, you know, you can look it up, nice, you know, Alex. You can see that they're weeds. And I said, well, who wrote the book? And their heads would explode on my driveway. Like, oh my God. And I'm like, yeah, man. And they're like, well, I got to refigure. I'm like, well, you know, this is my yard. You do whatever you want in your yard. But, you know, if I see something, you know, why are we just constantly, because someone says this needs to be destroyed, we don't understand its purpose. It's a living thing. Why do we just kill it? You know, because somebody says it needs to be killed. And, you know, that type of thoughtfulness, you know, is really kind of and another, you know, another yard story is a couple of years ago, I started kind of talking to my raspberry plants. And last year, and I can't make this up, every day, you know, we would get 2 quarts of raspberries off these bushes every single day for a period of almost 3 to 4 weeks. And, you know, I mean, literally nighttime, don't see in the morning. Wow. Right. And my wife was like, well, what kind of fertilizer did you use this year? And I said, I didn't use any. I just started talking to them. And she said, well, what did you say? And I said, well, I just said you're beautiful. And that was it. And, you know, you know, I think she became a believer after that. I don't see her talking to plants, but. You know, there is, you know, I mean, but then if you research that and you see in, you know, in just the plant and agriculture world, your relationship with what's growing really leads it to grow its optimal, in its most optimal fashion. And so, you know, that is... You know, but that extends all the way into the kitchen table, in as that I've worked with Native American chefs and just how they handle picking up a fish that they're about to butcher or tomato. They don't just slam it on the table. And so, you know, these are living things, you know, that we're going to cook and put into our bodies. And there's other science to explain, you know, just how, you know, animals that are scared, you know, when they're slaughtered, release these very, very toxic enzymes into their blood. And then, you know, we wonder why there's these all forms of cancer in this country versus other countries that don't do that. So, you know, these are things that are not hokey pokey. Sure. They're science based. There's data. Again, you know, we have to, you know, the learning piece, we have to learn beyond our familiar in as what's possible. You know, why do You know, why did the Native Americans do this? Why did certain cultures do that? And although we're not from that culture, we still need to have a high level understanding of why it might have been done, or what, or how it could impact a community. How are these things that you may seem as far off National Geographic rituals of different strange cultures as something being real that might be tangible that we could embrace, learning beyond the familiar?
Man, that was a mic drop moment. Just letting you know, because yeah, you just dropped a whole bunch of goodness right there, man. And when you said it, and also too, Alex, we're like a minute from the
sure, absolutely.
Do you have like maybe another 3 or 4 minutes before we wrap up? So when you say that, we're gonna wrap this up, but when you just said about talking to the plants and talking to living beings in our food, you know, reminds me of my mom. Blessings to her and her spirit, rest in presence. Her plants would always thrive, and people would always say, "What do you do to your plants? Is it the fertilizer?" My mom would use some like old stuff, like compost. But I always remember she would talk to her plants. Talk to them, man. And it's something that before I eat my meals, I always bless my food. And I'm putting this out here because, you know, for listeners of the podcast, you're going to take away a lot. You're going to take away what you take away from this. And if there's one thing that I invite you to take away is, wherever your space that you're in, take a pause before you put anything into your body. Bless yourself and bless what you're about to put in your body. Even bless the server if you go out to a fast food place, or bless whoever is serving your food. Bless whoever cooked your food. Bless yourself, because this is part of the relationship that we can have with food and how it could be that component that helps us learn, helps us grow, and helps us heal. We may have to have a part two to this, because after I listen to this, I'm most likely going to have more questions. But as we wrap up, there's two things. First of all, I want you, if you could tell the people how they can get in contact with you, how they can, and also how they can support your movement, what you're doing.
Well, I got
the second piece.
You know, we have a website that you know, again, first. We've been in this lane. We're the only organization in the country that focuses on chefs of color and people of color in the food space. So I invite everyone to visit our website, bcaglobal.org. That's B as in boy, C as in Charlie, A as in apple, global.org. And they can read more about not only what our mission is, but a lot of the program work that we've done to impact lives, to shape behaviors. Again, this is about also leadership in the community, which is something that we need to heavily focus on, especially in our society right now. And support the organization with any small donation. I mean, $5, $10. I mean, we're a grassroots organization that's transitioning to a systems change organization, but we will always have our grassroots support of making sure that we can continue our mission. And then I invite everyone to, you know, read the book. It's I don't know if, you want to give it an endorsement, but, there are some really profound chapters in there. It took 2.5 years for me to put together. There's 12
yes.
contributors. The foreword's written by the director of nutrition of Memorial Sloan Kettering, Dr. Veronica McClymont, very powerful sister. And, it was very intentionally done so that, you know, each chapter can almost be something to ponder and meditate over. And we've also sprinkled some recipes and blessings throughout the book. So you can go to loveisfood.org and read about the authors, the book, and the like. And if you need to get in contact with me, you can just send me an email at alex@bcaglobal.org. Really simple, alex@bcaglobal.org.
Yes, man. And as the endorsement, you are correct. And when you get, I invite people to get this book, because it is one of those books that you'll read a passage and you'll want to sit down and reflect on it. Because you cover, I mean, what you put together here, Alex, is amazing. Thank you. I'm grateful for this, because you put together some things where I really got to look at how I was eating. Even like when I was looking at regaining our food sovereignty, there's a chapter on bigger than me, mindfulness and community food work, even to cultivating a mindful lifestyle. And you know, one of my favorites where you talk about the five elements. We're going to have to dive into that another time. But this is a great book. It's got great recipes, which I appreciate. And also the blessings that you have in there is a really great touch. So I appreciate what you put together, man.
Absolutely.
Thank you for that. Now, thank you, man. So now the last piece is, you have 90 seconds. I want you to take 90 seconds. And this is your space to really get out to the listeners what you want to express, or what you want to the takeaways you want them to have from what we discussed today. So I'll give you those 90 seconds.
Okay. Well, you know, yeah. I would say that mindful eating for the beloved community has several different buckets in it, but everyone should consider all of the buckets as being something that could influence their personal, individual lives, families, and communities. The whole mindfulness is really around reflection and being able to show appreciation and gratitude for not only the food, but the universe that we exist in. Mindfulness is about being aware and not worrying about yesterday or worrying about tomorrow. And it's a practice, meaning that it's not going to be a silver bullet, but it will also, you know, help you maintain being centered and grounded, which is also necessary right now. In terms of the mindful eating piece, it's really, you know, what's your relationship with what you're putting inside your body? You know, being mindful of the food, of where it comes from, who grows the food, who harvests the food, who cooks the food. I mean, all of those things are a chain link that gets to us, and we do the most personal, intimate thing as we voluntarily put it inside our bodies. And then the beloved community is a continuation of Martin Luther King Jr.'s work. And as, you know, he felt through a lens of a beloved community that, you know, the space of collectiveness of all colors to focus on the alleviation of oppression, alleviation of hunger, of alleviation of the homelessness, and looking at the community and as that, if one part of the community is not doing good, then we as in part of that community is not doing well at all either. So we need to look at things from a very holistic approach, especially from our children that are being victimized. I pray for them today, on this day, because some of them are going hungry because school has been canceled. And, you know, everyone's trying to figure out how we're going to feed these children breakfast and lunch, but no one's even talking about dinner. And so, you know, the beloved community raises a collectiveness that can go up against the system, dismantle it, and can disrupt it so that we can have healthy and whole communities, which is the most productive community that you can have.
Breathing deep on that, man. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for shedding your wisdom, sharing your wisdom, and giving us some new things to think about. And for people that listen to this, pick up Mindful Eating for the Beloved Community. It is worth the investment. It's something you keep on your bookshelf. And there's ways that you can use it to really enhance community for yourself. Get that, dive into the relationship with yourself and really enhance how your relationship with food and the community. So, Alex, thank you for everything you're doing, man. I acknowledge you. I appreciate you. I admire you for everything, because learning more about you and you come from a high recommendation with Corey. So I'm like, listen, everything you said is true. You're an amazing man.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to
appreciate you,
finding
man.
More ways that we can amplify this conversation so that it could, you know, continue, even if it's a conversation starter, But we need to still have the conversation.
Yep. Ashe. I'm thinking we could do something.
Okay, you got it.
Once this is all going down, let's have a round table, man. Let's do a round table because I got some other cats I'd like to bring into this conversation because this is serious. Thank you for the time, Alex. I appreciate you. And for the listeners, thank you for listening again. More episodes coming. If you haven't heard the past episodes, listen to those things right now, por favor. And enjoy this episode. A lot of gems here. Listen to it multiple times because you'll get something different from it. I guarantee you that.
All right.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate you. And be well, everybody.
Peace.